This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for Making Yourself at Home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Good morning, Taranaki, and welcome to Making Yourself at Home at 104.4 FM. Your voice, your choice. I'm your host back after a long break, Brian, along with my co-host, Alina from Romania, and
Maria
from Venezuela.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning to the audience.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be back.
Great to be back, and thank you for coming back, Brian, after your 10 days retreat. It's amazing to have you back, and always welcome, because I was quite unsure how to do the buttons all these weeks. So it's great to have you back, and thank you for coming back, Maria, and joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so today we will discuss and curious about Brian's 10 days retreat, Vipassana. And I know I was hearing about this retreat for a long time. I would like to do it one day, maybe when my kids are older. So I'm looking forward to talk about this today. So let us know a little bit, Brian, how was that and why did you decide to go for a 10 days retreat?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking about my experience. This was maybe the fourth or fifth time I've signed up for the retreat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I've always managed to figure out reasons not to to go on it.
So to make sure, it's like a 10-day silent retreat where you can't talk, you can't write, you can't use your phone, right?
Right. So it is, it's called a 10-day silent retreat. You actually, it's 11 nights, so you show up on a day zero essentially, mm-hmm. and leave on day 11. So mm-hmm. I think that comes down to 11 nights, but it is a 10-day program, 10 full day program that you're a part of. And yeah, the rules, if you want to call them rules, are no reading, so you're not allowed to keep a book in your room. There's no writing, so no pen and paper. I actually asked the teacher if I could record some dreams that I had so I could remember them, because it's not easy to remember dreams, and I like to do my dream analysis, and he said no.
Wow.
That would be a distraction. So yeah, it is a 10-day program that has been firmly established and is strictly adhered to in Vipassana retreat centers around the world that follows this teacher's method. So the teacher is, the last name's Goenka. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the meditation style, which is called Vipassana, has been passed down. The claim from the Vipassana is that it's the sort of unadulterated teachings of Buddha. That made its way through teaching and was lost in other areas, but remained being taught in its purity within a small group in Burma, and was preserved there, and really started a renaissance with this Goenka in, I want to say, the 70s, maybe a little earlier than that. So he found a teacher to teach him the method. He was not a monk or anything. He was from a wealthy business family in Burma, and he was having a lot of, sounded like, psychosomatic health issues. And he traveled the world and saw the best doctors to try to relieve him of this pain and issues, and found Vipassana meditation, and it cured his ailments. And
wow.
He felt compelled to share that with his family and friends, and from then it just, yeah, it spread since then. And now I think I heard there's 2,000 Vipassana meditation centers around the world.
Wow.
I think that sounds right.
It's amazing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question. I mean, what is the purpose of this retreat? I mean, yeah, what is the aim? Healing, or had you said for people who have some kind of pain, or what is?
So I think the purpose is personal for everybody. Mm-hmm. For me, it was, I came across the 10-day retreat, must have been maybe eight years ago. It was soon after I arrived in New Zealand, actually. So I started meditating a year and a half before I moved to New Zealand. So that was about 10 years ago. And then I moved to New Zealand about a year and a half after I started meditating. And shortly after that, I came across, somebody was talking about the 10-day retreat here. So for me, it was about deepening my meditation practice and just using, completely immersing myself in that space of meditation. Meditation's a very important part of my life, and really helps me deal with things. Mm. And helps me be the best me I can be. And meditation really fascinates me, the experience of meditating and the insights I gain into consciousness and experience are very interesting. I'm quite curious about exploring that internal environment. I used to live very externally through my travels that I'm sure I've talked about plenty on the show before in the outdoors. And my lifestyle changed quite a bit while I was doing my PhD. And I didn't have that time and space to explore outside. And so I used my new lifestyle to start exploring the inner terrain. And then I recently signed up for this retreat really because I needed to just disconnect from everyday life and the demands of everyday life and the bad habits that I've developed over the past few months or years, and a phone addiction, I guess. Just really, I needed a retreat. Really, I think calling it a retreat was quite an appropriate term for it. I just needed to get away and disconnect from everyday life.
Did it help?
Yeah. So the challenges were much different than I was expecting them to be. So people, I guess the first question was about the silence. A lot of people, I think, when they hear it's a 10-day silent retreat, think the silence is really a major challenge. For me, not really. And that's, yeah, I don't think anybody who actually goes through the experience is challenged by not talking. I'm quite introverted. I would say I'm pretty fiercely introverted. So the lack of small talk over 10 days was actually quite a respite and vacation from having to do that. I really enjoyed that. It's funny. So like getting there, getting to the retreat center and just waiting for the program to start and everything, and the small talk that was happening between the participants and everything.
I found it so challenging, right?
I was like, when does the silence start? Like, I don't want to have small talk right now. I just want to go into silence.
You want to go into retreat, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So you turn your phone in, so there's no access to the phone. That was, I wasn't thinking about what I'm missing, the FOMO of real life or anything. So that wasn't, it was a good break from the phone. It was a good way to break the habits that I was developing and giving into on a daily basis. That helped. And then the practice of Vipassana, which I guess this is a good segue to start describing that practice. the lessons I learned and the experiences that I gathered during that experience have been applicable and helpful to daily life. So,
how is that meditation? So do you have to stay in certain positions or like, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so Vipassana is a specific type of meditation. I think a lot of people mislabel different styles of meditation as Vipassana. Based on my experience, Vipassana really involves the focus of sensation of breathing in and around the nose above the upper lip, and then going through body scans for the duration of the meditation. I think a lot of people think mindfulness is Vipassana meditation, mindfulness being just observing thoughts and not attaching to thoughts, and just really noticing a thought and saying, okay, there's a thought, letting it go. I think I thought that's what Vipassana was before I attended the retreat. But Vipassana is, from my experience at the retreat, is really about getting to the point where you can cultivate an intense amount of attention and focus on the body to be able to direct your attention to specific areas in the body and feel, I guess, an energy there, a sensation, which, you know, the sensation could be described, or energy is a useful term to describe kind of the sensation that
it's
you
on the
feel there.
Top of your head, or what is the sensation mainly?
So when you get to the body scan, you're supposed to start at the tip top of the head, which I believe is a chakra, if you're aware of the body's chakras. I'm not super articulate in the idea of chakras, but I believe there's a chakra at the top of the head, which is like an energy.
Where the energy flows in, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
So you start there, and then there's different ways to do the body scan, but during the retreat, we were taught to go kind of just piece by piece around the skull and then through different locations on the face. So because this is a radio show and can't see me pointing to different points of my body right now, so the forehead, and then the eye, and then the cheek on down, and then to the other side, the eye and the cheek on down, and then through the middle, the nose, the upper lip, the mouth, the chin, and then through the neck, through the torso, down each arm to the fingertips. Depending on whether the instruction, it could be each individual arm or both arms at the same time, down all the way piece by piece through the body into the tips of the toes. Pointing attention and maintaining focus as well as possible on the specific area you're trying to observe that sensation in.
So interesting. And how long do you have to focus on one part of your body?
A Vipassana sit is for 1 hour.
For 1 hour each part? Or 1 hour?
For a seated Vipassana meditation, the duration is for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. So during that time, depending on how sensitive you are in that moment and how easy it is for you to notice those bodily sensations and how open the energy is through your body, you'll go through, the body scan anywhere from 6 to 12 to 20 times kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah, so So during the retreat, the first, I want to say 3 days, the first day is just about the full day, which starts at 4:30. The wake up bell is at 4:30 in the morning. The The meditation hall opens up at, I want to say, 5 a.m. And that meditation lasts for 2 hours. And that's not a Vipassana. That's just kind of a practice, like an open session to work on your practice, to try different things maybe. It's not like a hardcore Vipassana meditation. You can make it Vipassana. It's a place to kind of challenge yourself and try different things, try different seated positions to see if, you don't have, and during the Vipassana sit, which we learned to do on day 4, I want to say, and practice for the rest of the retreat, and learned smaller variations of during that 4 days, but 7 days. So day 1, I'll just go through it. Day 1, focus on sensations in and at the tip of the nose. Day 2, really focus on the tip of the nose. Day 3 is focusing on sensations on the upper lip. And so starting at 4:30, meditation hall, you're learning, you're doing, focusing on those things. Go have breakfast, come back, have a break after breakfast for an hour, then go back in the hall and sit for, I want to say, an hour. Then there's a slight break, and then there's another 2 hour sit, and then either there's lunch or another hour sit and then lunch. And then after lunch, hour break, and then another hour sit, and then a 2 hour sit, and then maybe an hour sit, and then a fruit for dinner. Fruit for dinner for all 10 days. And then another hour sit, and then a, what are they called? Dharma talk, which is a video of Goenka talking about Vipassana.
Yes.
And then a 45-minute sit after that, and that gets to about 9 o'clock. So the days start at 4:30 and end at 9 p.m. So they're quite long days.
Wow, long days.
Yeah, busy.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to, in those breaks, to have a nap, or?
You're not supposed to.
Okay.
So during the Vipassana retreats. So I listed some hour sits. You can meditate in your room. I learned that if I go to my room, I'm going to take a nap.
Yes,
in the first few days, that's what I did. I said I got up to day 3, where the focus all day is essentially on the upper lip and the space between the lip and the nose. And then day 4, that's when we started to learn the body scan. And on those days, the hour-long sits, we are instructed to sit as still as possible without shifting our position for an hour.
Sounds really hard. I mean,
Also
the position is like...
Have pads to sit on. They give us pillows and pads to build our seats. People get quite creative with how they did it, and a blanket. I utilized the blanket under my legs to boost up my knees. People get quite creative at engineering their seats. I actually got a backboard also to get my back some support. I was not completely silent for the entire time. Because, I asked the manager some questions about just things about the room or something. And the teacher, I think just about every other day during the day, asks about your practice. And then during lunch and after the last meditation of the evening, you can ask the teacher questions about issues you're having or about insights or some misunderstanding that you had during the day.
Is this like a one-to-one talk with him, or is like a group talk?
There's you're sitting in a group during the check-ins during the day, that happened every other day, and then the one at lunch in the evenings, more one-on-one. So during the first check-in after we started doing Vipassana, the instructor asked the people in the group I was in whether we could sit for the entire hour without moving our position. And I could not. I was in excruciating pain.
Pain, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
What was pain. What was hurting you, like the back or?
My hips, my knee, my legs, very intensely. And I didn't know what this really, what all this was about. So I would move my position. And because, you know, I was listening to my body and I was trying to be kind to myself, I was a little worried about like actually hurting myself because of how intense the pain actually was. And so the teacher asked if I could sit still for the hour. And I said, no, I have to change my position once. And he said, more determination.
He said, wow, that's a hard one. More determination.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
I'm curious, based on what you said, for people attending to this retreat, they needed to have any previous experience? Or
no.
Could be somebody, I would say like me, I haven't done too much meditation in my life, I don't have any experience that I can go straight to the retreat and try?
Before the retreat started, after like, you know, the registration sign in, you know, settling in period when we were before the program started, I talked to a guy and he had never meditated before. It's shocking. I'd say, and after the retreat on the last day, we were allowed to talk and catch up and talk, share our experiences with each other. There was a couple of people that had very, very, very little meditation retreat, essentially zero meditation experience. Which is shocking to me, just absolutely unbelievable to think about.
And like, they managed in...
They weren't just thrown in the deep end. They were thrown in, you know, back beach on a rough day, trying to learn how to swim kind of thing. Like, unbelievable to reflect on those people's experiences and what they had to have been going through. Yeah.
What is your recommendation?
I would say learn how to meditate beforehand. But, you know, talking to the people, it seemed like they were able to understand. Because even, you know, it took me by day four when the guy said more determination to me to understand what we're doing. And the days previous, it's like, yeah, we're supposed to focus on that area. But what about all these other things? Like, what about the thoughts that come up? You know, what about the pain? What about this or that arises while sitting for hours at a time? Like, what are you supposed to do with all that? There really wasn't that much instruction. You could ask questions during these times if you had them, I guess. But yeah, to have never meditated before and to go through that, it's hard to imagine those people's real experiences. I would start a 10 to 20 minute daily practice if you were interested in attending one of these retreats and do that for a few months before attending, at least, would be my suggestion. But everybody's different. People show up having no experience and have a great time. But yeah, so when he told me more determination, I completely changed my approach to sitting and experiencing the pain. And I think the instructions we got also helped me develop a better understanding of what to do. So, you know, during the body scan, it was really trying to cultivate as much attention to the specific place in the body in every moment. And then during one of the sits, we were instructed to actually, when we got to a place where there was that intense pain, to really spend time observing that pain and understanding that pain and noticing what is it actually. And in my case, some of the pains were just like a stretch. you know, it was just like, oh, that's actually just a stretch. Like one, I can feel that muscle or tendon pulling on another muscle or tendon attached to another muscle or tendon. And that's all it is. It's just a stretch. Yeah, there's some pain, but really it's just stretching. Okay, it's not as scary, I guess, as I thought it was. I don't think I'm going to hurt myself feeling that pull. And other pains were just pulses. And it's just like, okay, that's not a constant screaming pain. It's just kind of a pulse that's happening that's off and on. And if it's just off and on, like, okay, that's not that big a deal. Okay. And I really got to understand what those seemingly screaming painful sensations were and to just really become comfortable with them. At which point, you know, when I was able to maintain that focus, I was able to sit still for an hour, which was pretty incredible, like, to get to that point after, you know, the way I described it in my head was my legs became a war zone. Like, it was violent down there, the sensations I was feeling, like, screaming pain. To get to the point where I became very comfortable, not because there wasn't pain, but comfortable with the pain, was a really, really profound experience to undergo.
Wow.
And I guess to go back to one of the previous question of, I guess what difference did it make, or what did I get from it? So this practice of meditation is applicable to daily life to understand, like, okay, when something that arises in us, whether it's good or bad, it's understanding, being able to have the attention of, oh, there is this bodily sensation. It's temporary. It's going to pass. It's not that big of a deal. And it's completely temporary. And because of that, I don't need to react to it. I can respond in a rational manner too. And therefore, you know, if my goal in life is to be a good person that's full of love and compassion and wanting to, you know, not be mean and not, you know, scream at somebody for pissing me off or, you know, whatever, or try to punish somebody for them not doing something I don't want them to do or whatever, you know, that's probably not the best thing to do to people. Instead say, okay, my initial reaction was this thing. I feel it in my chest or in my head or in my arms or whatever. That's just a sensation. I can sit with that for a second. It'll subside, and I will respond to this situation in a much better manner. And hopefully, I can apply love and compassion to that response.
It's like a managing your emotions as well.
Very, I think so. It does because I think our emotions are. We have these emotions that are really just bodily sensations that we come up with mental stories and apply words to, say, you know, like, oh, there is an emotion arises, we label it and attach a story to it, whether it's based on our experiences or whatever, and say, oh, you know, I'm angry right now, therefore I'm entitled to be a dick.
Yeah.
Or be really sad right now and I'll just remove myself and shut down or this or that. And those are the kind of scripts we run on and reactions that we have. And Vipassana, from my experience and understanding, really helps to understand that we have a choice on how we respond to those sensations and the things that initiate those sensations.
Wow. That's amazing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's very similar, like, with a craniosacral therapy that that I'm training now is the same. You know, whenever a client is coming up with pain in their body, it's usually what we say is like, can you stay with that? You know, can we stay with that pain or for a while and see what happens? And usually what happens is that pain goes away after a while, or maybe the client becomes more aware of it and settles in, and then everything disappears. So it's like whatever we put attention on, that thing, if we are present, in a way disappears, or we acknowledge it. It's the same with something, you know, like with the children, you know, if a child is crying, we pay attention, then they feel better. It's like a comforting thing, right?
Yeah.
Was going away the pain after a while, or like you didn't feel it, or was just there and you accepted it, or how did it happen?
It's just the attention, giving that pain, those sensations, the attention. So, you know, I would feel it when I was focusing on somewhere else in the body. I was aware that it was there, but I would say, okay, right now the important thing is to focus on the part of the body where I want to send my attention. I'll get to that point, you know, where the pain is in my knee. That I'll get there eventually. And then when I'd get there, I'd give it the attention, and then I would notice, you know, it's really just that tendon pulling on something in my shin, or I feel that pain and it's connected to something in my hip. Mm. And just giving that pain the attention and understanding of what's going through just really helped to alleviate the discomfort that's involved with the pain. Hard to describe.
It's very interesting. And do you feel like whenever the pain was there, is there any memories or something that came into your mind in regards to the pain, or it's mainly pain?
Mainly pain, but during the retreat and the instructions that were given and the time to reflect and the time to, I guess, you know, in that environment, there's going to be insights into consciousness and experience. Some of the things that, during the Dharma talks, the teacher Goenka would talk about attachment, things that we are attached to, usually good things that we're attached to, as well as aversion, things that we're averse to, things like pain. And one of the insights I had was one of my strong desires is I desire desire. It's not actually, like, for me, getting what I want isn't really necessarily always the goal.
Yeah.
It's actually the comfort I get from the feeling of wanting something.
Yeah, it makes sense, right?
Yeah. So that was one of the insights I got. So I think it's applicable to people who are like addicted to smoking cigarettes. Mm. Like they get from what I've read about, they get an alleviation of whatever they feel when they want to smoke a cigarette by smoking a cigarette. So it's that, you know, they are creating their own desire so that they can experience that alleviation of that desire. And that's the addiction.
Yeah.
It's that alleviation of. Mm.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Do you have a little bit curious, how many people?
There were about 60 students there.
Wow.
And I'm not sure how many people helping with the cooking and cleaning behind the scenes. Maybe 20 volunteers and teachers, maybe 30.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really incredible the number of people who actually go through and do these 10-day retreats. Like it's a number of people.
And is it run once a year, twice a year?
With the 10-day retreats, there's probably, I don't want to get this wrong, but maybe 6 a year at the one in Auckland. There's longer, I want to say they host longer retreats there too, and shorter retreats for return students. They offer shorter and longer retreats. So there's 60-day Vipassana retreat, 30-day Vipassana retreats, and 90-day silent Vipassana retreats.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So there's a famous author, Yuval Noah Harari, who wrote Sapiens, pretty important book. So he is a Vipassana practitioner, and he does, I want to say, at least one 10-day retreat a year. And he says sometimes he does 30-day retreats every year. Wow. It's pretty wild to think about. And he also sits for 2 hours a day. So after the retreat, the Vipassana practice in everyday life for somebody who's like not a monk is to meditate for an hour every morning and every evening. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. But yeah, to do that hour sit with the pain, you know, with the discomfort, and it's pretty interesting to think about if one were to commit to doing that, how it would change their life and the reasons why. So the retreat was really an intense experience, knowing I'm going to have to sit for that hour through that excruciating pain, and I'm going to have to be able to sit and cultivate that focus that I know I need to have in that moment to be able to sit with that pain. And so the whole day essentially was about getting the mind to a place where I know this is coming, I'm preparing for that, essentially. And so I think if somebody were to live their daily life in that manner of, okay, tonight I'm going to have to sit with this pain, you know, I'm going to have that attention, I think their daily life, they would really kind of engineer it to be able to sit in some form of comfort during those daily practices that they have, knowing like they're going through some stuff later that day. Yeah, I think it would create days of much greater conscious decision making about how to manage things like stress and
or pain. You know, there are some people who are having constant pain all their life, like, you know, people with CRIPS, if you know what it is, like, you know, fibromyalgia. It's constant pain on your body all the time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
if Vipassana would
fit that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many people can do a 10-day retreat? Are there people who are, let's say, after one day, say, "Oh, that's not for me," and they leave? Can you do that, or?
It's highly, highly, highly discouraged, I would say. So, you know, during the process of signing up online, you know, I think they check to make sure multiple times you intend to stay for 10 days. And then when you get there and you're going through the in-person registration, you are agreeing to staying for 10 days. And they will check in and make sure that you really do intend to stay for 10 days. Because really it's going through that program of, okay, cultivating that awareness of the breath in the nose, and then the tip of the nose, and then the upper lip, and then in the body. And it's interesting because some of the volunteers I met on the last day where we were allowed to start talking, they attended longer retreats. So they attended the 30-day retreats, and they're talking about what happens on the, I don't know if they're 60-day retreats, but 90-day retreats. So on those, a third of those retreats are dedicated to cultivating that attention to those areas of the body. So these are very, very experienced Vipassana practitioners. And if they're on a 90-day retreat...
Wow, 90 days sounds extreme, right?
Oh, it's very extreme.
Yes.
So that's a 3-month retreat. Yeah. They'll spend the first month 10 days, every day, the first 10 days are about breathing into the nose and feeling sensations in the nose. The next 10 days are about breathing at the, you know, the awareness of the tip of the nose. The next 10 days is that sensation
in the upper lip.
On the upper lip,
yeah.
Before going into Vipassana during the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
It's pretty wild to think about. Yeah.
I have a question. Do you think if you, first, would you do it again? And second, if you do it again, do you think you're going to be better prepared for that?
I'll be much better prepared knowing what I'm getting into and understanding, okay, like, I'm going to be facing very intense physical discomfort and pain.
Mm.
And I know I can, how to deal with that. I would do it again for sure. I would really like to serve as a somebody that works in the kitchen or helps clean up and support a retreat for others. So it's a free retreat.
Wow. Is it Koha or is it just free?
Yeah, they ask for a donation at the end to cover the fees. They say it'd be $440 for 10 days.
Wow, it's not so much, right? It's
for room and board, it's, you know, less than $50 a day.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, they're not trying to make a profit on anybody.
Mm.
And they said really the best form of you giving back is for you to come and volunteer at a retreat for others, mm-hmm. and serve others, which is pretty incredible to think about. Mm. Like, they're offering this for free. It's absolutely wild to think about that. And the retreat center is in a beautiful, beautiful location. You're in the bush. There's a great, like, little walking track with a waterfall. And there's glowworms there.
Wow.
It's
Are
beautiful.
You allowed to walk, or you have to stay in the
During the
inside.
Breaks. So during those breaks, after meals, that's when the walking periods are.
Mm. Okay.
But yeah, you're not supposed to meditate outside. You're supposed to, if you're going to not meditate in the meditation hall, you should be in your room meditating,
mm-hmm.
and not sleeping.
Did you? And you said you a few times you fall asleep, right?
Oh yeah, in the first few days when I wasn't really, I don't want to say I wasn't taking it seriously, but I was taking it easy.
Okay.
I would take naps.
Are you getting tired after a while, or? Because it's 4:30, right?
Yeah. Like I said, like, I've never been so focused for so long in my life on a task. Like, I was pretty dialed in during the days when I did I would compare how I did my PhD. Like, there were my days I was hyper focused. In my days, I was able to really organize and plan to be my peak mental performance,
mm-hmm.
every day to get through my PhD. That focus that I had then is comparable, but it isn't the kind of focus that I had at the retreat. It was really about, okay, where do I need to get to? How am I going to get to the point where I'm going to be able to get through that hour sit that I have coming up?
Mm-hmm. I imagine when the hour came up, I was like, oh, yeah.
It would get to the it got to the point where I was able to sit for, you know, I didn't want to just jump out of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, for me, once I got quite comfortable with the Vipassana, so part of the Vipassana is actually doing like full body scans to just feel energy waves through the body, I guess, kind of thing. And I would have very, very, very intense experiences of that.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, that would actually sometimes like wipe out any pain that I was having and clear it up. Yeah, it was really, really intense. Those just like, and just waves of energy through the body.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed, like, part of the Vipassana is doing that one or two times, that real kind of fast, intense scan and feel, and then go back to the piece by piece.
And in relationship with, you know, making yourself at home, did you feel that sense of home in this retreat? Like whenever you were like coming back to yourself and your body and your sense of being, or?
It's a new fallback plan. So a lot of people just kind of travel around the world and volunteer at, and do retreats around the world. And that's, that could be a lifestyle, is just going from being, traveling globally from retreat center to retreat center and doing a retreat or serving. And I would, if all else fails, that's probably definitely a fallback plan I would consider doing with my life. You know, tie back in with a previous lifestyle that I had, which was quite similar to that. But for me, I felt quite welcome and quite comfortable in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing, Brian. I think it's a lifetime experience, experienced there.
I feel extremely fortunate to have had that time. And I would highly recommend, is very well worth my time. And if other people have the time to take, because it's not a financial, finances aren't going to hold you back from it, but it's the time, being able to take the time off work or time away from the family that that is what would hold anybody back from doing it. I wish I'd taken the time years ago, if not decades ago, to do it, just because it's such a incredible skill and experience to be able to carry forward.
Is any restriction in terms of age? I guess people younger than 18 or something cannot take it, or any there are no age restrictions?
They do children's workshops, but they're I don't know. They're not 10-day retreats, and I'm sure their parents are involved in attending also. I don't know what the age limit is for a retreat in terms of the lower bound or the upper bound.
But I imagine like maybe 10 or 11-year-old couldn't do that, right?
It'd be quite the experience for them. It really would be, though.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine you have to be 16 plus.
I would imagine so also. I did ask the same question to one of the elder sitters, somebody that was volunteering there. I asked if there was a lower age limit, just because thinking how incredible of a skill that would be for a younger person to carry forward in their life. Yeah. So yeah, I guess if anybody listening is interested, just Google Vipassana, VIPASANNA.
Yeah, and we can also add it on our Facebook page.
New Zealand. Okay. The retreat center is called Medini, MEDINI, something along those lines. If you Google any of that, I'm sure you'll be able to find it. Dhamma.org is kind of another path. DHAMMA.org is another way to find the retreat center here and other retreat centers around the world if you want to make it a trip. Anybody who thinks they need to go to India to go on a meditation retreat, I think I would save India to travel and maybe do, a day sit somewhere kind of thing in a monastery. But they do it very, 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 very well here. It's a great, great place. And it's the real deal. Like it's very authentic.
It's amazing.
The food is fantastic.
Wow. And the fruits, right? The fruits in the evening.
vegetarian food. Sorry, the dinners are not. It's all you eat is fruit at dinner, which is tough because some days after sitting for so long and going through all of that, I just wanted a nice meal at the end of the day, and I didn't get it.
I imagine.
It was just like an apple, a kiwi fruit, and a banana, and that was it. It's just like, man.
And it's like you can't serve yourself. It's not like a buffet. It's like
no, it is. It is. You kind of only want to eat so much fruit.
Yeah, exactly, before going to sleep.
You're not
going to
get, you know, that comfort of a nice cooked meal from fruit, no matter how much you eat.
Yeah, I know. Wow.
No, but the food, the breakfast and lunches are they make up for it. And there was plenty to eat. I was never left hungry after a meal besides dinner. Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, and chatting with people. On day 9, we learned metta, which is a loving kindness practice, where there's more of an intention involved with the, and it's tagged on to at the end of an hour long Vipassana sit is practicing metta for a few minutes. And that's, you know, wishing yourself to be happy, to be safe, to feel love, and wishing others to feel happy, to be safe and to feel loved. And there's a practice that's involved with that. And then on day 10 is when we got to interact with the other people sitting, the other students and the volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was, you know.
That was amazing, I imagine, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of funny things that popped up there. The people, because we had assigned seats that we sat in every time in the hall. And so I sat next to the same person in front of the same person every sit. Mm-hmm. And those people certainly mentioned the progress that I made because of how often I would have to stand up. Like the first few days, I would have to stand up during the long, like 2-hour sits.
Yeah.
I was standing up and like shifting
around.
My position a lot.
Wow.
And so they made note of just how much progress I made along the way. Yeah, so there's a certain kind of camaraderie, even though you're avoiding eye contact the whole time, but there's a certain camaraderie, and you can tell everybody's kind of on the same page of developing that focus of getting their practice to where they wanted to get to.
Mm.
And then, the socializing was just, you know, these are all people that went through a similar experience as you, had the same motivations of doing a retreat. Yeah.
Mm, wow.
Pretty amazing experience.
Pretty amazing. And I feel so fortunate to listen to that because I always wanted to know what it is, you know. And thank you for sharing that with us, Brian.
You. My pleasure.
Thank you for sharing your experience.
And taking your time. And I'm looking forward of maybe next episode how you feel afterwards and what impact had on your life, you know, and how on your relationships and everything. I imagine it's a big shift.
It doesn't make you perfect, I'll tell you that.
Maybe you want to make people around you
maybe
perfect.
10% better. Maybe 10% better. Yeah. Well, thanks for your questions, and it was really, I appreciate the platform to talk about my experience and to, I guess, document it and be able to have it to steer people towards if they ever ask me about it and want to know more.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Maria, for being here.
Well, thank you, Profuchu.
And
thank you to the audience.
And see you next time, same time, same place.
Yep.
Access Radio Taranaki. And I'm happy to have Brian again and looking forward for new guests.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah, have a nice day.
You.
Take care, Taranaki.
See you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.